This week's Pseudopod is brought to you by Audible. Go to audiblepodcast.com/pseudopod to claim your free audiobook. Pseudopod episode 122, December 26th. Happy Boxing Day, everybody. 2008. This week's story, Let Them Bleed, by Lila Wilde. Hello, welcome to Pseudopod, the increasingly festive weekly horror podcast. I'm your host, Alistair Stewart, and firstly, that's the last festive pun this week, my hand to God, and secondly, this week's story brings you that most festive of traditions, incredibly grim tales of life on the underside. Written by Lila Wilde, this story is previously unpublished, although Lila's work has previously appeared in Fantasy Magazine and Morbid Curiosity. She also runs ChateauBizarre.com. Your narrator this week is J.C. Hutchins, the man behind the Seventh Son range of novels. So, make sure you get paid up front, and keep your head down, because I have a story for you, and I promise you, it's true.
Let Them Bleed, by Lila Wilde. Stosh wore his sneakers as he walked along the incoming tide, let cool water ooze over his toes. It was awkward, squishing along in the wet sand, but he didn't want to risk stepping on a broken seashell or a needle. His shoes were already filthy, not much left for the water to ruin. He swept his eyes over the beach, scanned among piles of trash for Liddy. Instead, he spotted a skinny figure running his way. Stosh! Mia. Christ. She reached him and stopped, panting a little. You seen Yvonne? She asked. Green eyes that used to glitter, now filled with swamp gas. There was something about her that grated today. Back from the freak house, huh? What dance did Gary make you do today? Oh, fuck you. Stosh had made only one trip to the sky blue bungalow. The flowers in the yard led to spikes in the basement, blades and clamps and latex gloves. Restraints of every flavor, stained with the accumulated sweat of other desperate kids, lots and lots of things to make sure that you couldn't get away. Fingers glinting with gold, hooking into jittering skin. A video camera presided over it all. It wasn't until it was over that he learned that Gary only paid in dope. So, have you seen Yvonne? She repeated. No. Fuck! She shifted her weight from foot to foot, breathed heavily. Sweat was beginning to shine on her forehead, and if she didn't find Yvonne soon, she'd be throwing up. If you see her, you know where I'll be. He watched her run off down the beach, toward the lighthouse, and wished that she would keep on running, right out of his life. Unbelievable. Liddy had found a bag of weed beneath one of the rotted lifeguard boats. She dented a can, stabbed holes in the bin to make a bowl, torched it with a lighter filched from a stranger's pocket. She inhaled the sweet smoke and it hit her almost instantly. It had been so long. She passed it to Stosh and held it in as long as she could. Her eyes drifted around the rotting planks of the boardwalk. From under here, she could watch people walking overhead, although at this end, the passers-by were few and far between. They'd cleared a spot from themselves here, patted down with the sand from trash-picked clothes and rags, stacked seashells in a circle for a fire pit. It stank of decay, of mold and mildew and overripe things, but they'd gotten so used to it that they couldn't smell it anymore. And what a great view of the beach. Her stomach growled. They'd known it would make their hunger worse, but passing up a chance to blur everything for a couple of hours, well, that was like splitting back a gift from the gods. The letters scratched on the wood caught her attention. She knew them by heart, but read them again. Here we three sit, holding alcoholic counsel in the land of the damned. Mia, back when her addiction was just liquor, before that night. Liddy shuddered. The pot was making everything more vivid, breaking through the wall that shrouded her emotions in indifference, made life in this existence endurable. Images invaded her vacant heart. Mia's face, blood dried in trickles from her eyes and her nose, her face serene. More blood on her body, on her clothes, but not feeling a thing. She'd bought a bottle of vodka with panhandling change, so eager for an escape, drowning her disgust in quick, bitter swallows. Dizzy and disoriented, she tried to walk back to their stretch of the boardwalk, but went the wrong way, off into a half-abandoned neighborhood, and into the outstretched arms of predators. fists at first, unfurling into greedy hands that tore her clothes away, forced her terrified flesh apart in the back of a burned-out car. They'd thrown her into a dumpster when they were done with her. But the worst was yet to come. Frankie, who'd spotted her limping home in the morning light. "I got something to make you better." Mia had been afraid of needles, but the pain shrieked over any lingering squeamishness from her former life. "You're gonna feel sick at first, but just wait. It'll make it all go away." And it did. It kept her from having to feel the damage. The bruises, the blood, yeah, but the hopelessness. Before that, guilt, exile, lost on Channel H, it was all washed away. Liddy shook herself, jumped out of Mia's footsteps. Shit, this stuff was strong. She jumped up, brushed sand off her jeans. "Where you going?" asked Stosh. "Mia's back from Gary's, right? Think she's on the boardwalk?" "Yeah, she'll be upstairs." "I'm going to catch up with her." Stosh raised his eyebrows, but said nothing. Liddy glanced out at the sand, the water, tried to steady herself on their vastness as she walked toward the steps, get her defenses back up. It was dangerous to let empathy run you over out here. But too late. Yvonne stood at the edge of the boardwalk, hands clasped together at the railing as she watched the sun go down. "Let the games begin." Theta Barra's airbrushed face smoldered from the back of her leather jacket. The Countess of Bathory was a much more appropriate icon. The boardwalk was her turf, and even though most of the area had been condemned or deserted, she turned a considerable profit, especially from some of the nastier spheres of her clientele, pervs like Gary who'd wrung an underground economy out of their fetish for the truly down and out. Urbane facades, hideous secrets hidden in their basements, corrupting so much of the local currency from dollar bills to plastic bags. "It's not enough to have them bound and gagged," Gary had told her at the start. "I like to watch them snap." Money could get you out. Dope made sure you never left. Their little arrangements gave the boardwalk broke a way to fix, no matter how empty their pockets were. She could stay plushed out on what Gary sent her alone. Her convenience fee. No muss and fuss of actual drugs on his property. No cash exchanging strange hands. He preferred to let Frankie handle the delivery details while she sent over a steady supply of shattered stars for his home movies. It was something Yvonne had in common with Gary. The pleasure of a desolate face underfoot. A spirit extinguished slowly beneath the weight of unspeakable acts. Broken. It wasn't just the hefty income that kept her here. There was something about the utter hopelessness of these addicts. She was the only connection who bothered with the boardwalk market, since everyone else set up shop for the rich and famous down south. That world was too complicated for her tastes. Too much competition, too much ass-kissing, and behind the sequins was always the lingering smell of shit. Out here in the wasteland, life had fewer rules. It was the survival of the fittest, kill or be killed. And wasn't a simpler life all the rage these days? Her own personal torture chamber was right here, on the boards, out in the open. Her customers literally put their heads into her hands, having nowhere else to go. Look at that Mia, for one. Yvonne had devised a fun little game of hide-and-seek with her pay, just for her. Down south wouldn't put up with that nonsense. Oh, no, no. And Frankie was already on to his next assignment. It was best to keep him busy, she'd found. Cold, efficient, brutal, ideal qualities in a right-hand man, and none of which she wanted too close to the handling of the business. But what an excellent accomplice he was. Such fun, stoking her sadistic fires to grow ever more vile. Time for Mia to pick up her paycheck. She smiled to herself before disappearing into the darkness, leaving the boardwalk to its inhabitants. Liddy followed Mia into the public bathroom. The locks were busted and it hadn't been cleaned in years, but at least it was indoors. The stench choked her as she crossed the threshold. The door slammed behind her as if eager for her suffocation. The mirror was shattered, but that hadn't stopped someone from spray-painting it with "Die All Cunts" in dripping green letters. Tiles in the floor were coming loose and Mia tripped, skinned her knees. Barely registering the injury, she got up and dove into the last stall, started digging into the little trash can nailed to the wall. Her hands grew sticky with blood, other women's blood. She plunged her arm in further, scraped her fingers along the bottom. "Got it!" she yelled. Liddy turned back, revolted, as she heard Mia pull her lace out of her boot. Why had she come? There was nothing she could do. She went back outside and breathed in the night air. Drifted over to the railing, sat down on the steps. Inside her jacket was a crumpled photograph. She pulled it out and stared at it. Four friends, each caught in some self-defining moment. Another beach, 3,000 miles away. They'd asked a nearby sunbather to take their picture. Someone who'd said, sure, and actually didn't try to make off with the camera. In the picture, Mia was sitting cross-legged, looking out into the horizon. She was always staring off into space back then, so quiet about her life. Liddy would have given anything to know what thoughts had been whirling around in her friend's head before they were gone forever. She moved on. Behind Mia was Liddy, grin splashed across her face, trying to liberate the beach by taking off her bikini top. Stosh was trying to stop her, but his eyes gave him away. Eddie was lying on the towel beside him, eyes closed, arms stretched out at his sides. He looks like he's sleeping. Or dead. Liddy shook herself. Eddie's accident is how they all got here in the first place, after all. She shoved the picture back into her pocket. She felt like she'd traded places with Mia. Now Mia was the one who didn't care past today, while Liddy was left to scan the skies, silent and solitary. Stosh watched the black waves erode Liddy's half-hearted sandcastles. Down the boardwalk, the Ferris wheel loomed yellow and orange like a flexing sun. 40 cars, he'd counted, childhood dream greeting their first night here as they'd walked up to see the sights. It had been bad, calliope cheer and cotton candy underlined with hostile stares. The scent of boardwalk pizza made their stomachs growl, and they tried to raid some of the garbage cans for food but got chased off. They'd walk back in silence. A few cars cruised by, stereo jacked on grinding metal. Stosh recognized the tune, something from a few years back, about the knives of paradise, blood on the vines. Something he'd stomped around to in the club, him and Liddy dancing and trying not to get swept away by the crowd. She'd know who this was. The car stopped, engine killed, but the driver had left the stereo on, probably lighting up now that a nice private spot had been found. The drift of Kind Bud on the Wind a minute later confirmed his suspicion. The album played on. It had been so long since they'd heard that loud screaming thrash. The vocals yelled out over the fast guitars, jackhammer drums, beats thundering down through his bones, too much to resist. Stosh got up and started spinning around, kicking at the sand, whipping his hair in wild circles and stomping in the remains of the sandcastles. Yeah! The smoker was flashing him the devil horns. Stosh wasn't sure if the guy was laughing with him or at him, but he didn't care. The engine started, and then the car rode off into the dusk, but the song was still stuck in Stosh's head. Blood on the Vines. Oh, Frankie. He'd probably hide her pay in a toilet next. Mia wondered if the stories were true, that the walls inside his place were painted red with the blood of people who'd pissed Yvonne off. Well, as long as he didn't hide it there. White spilled through her veins, radiated across her body, flooded her senses with a warm, dreamy euphoria. It was only in these moments that she could truly be calm, when the grim kaleidoscope of her life lay eclipsed beneath a tranquilizing fog, subdued for a precious spell of time. She sat at the top of the lighthouse and gazed out over the town. Block after block, dramas unfolded under the streetlights, a car slowing down, two men walking towards the driver's window, a girl in high heels and a miniskirt glancing behind her as she walked up the street, kids popping wheelies next to an overturned garbage can, sad, sad little scenes. It was seeing those borders around their own lives that had gotten them out here, started the whole trip. Somewhere towards the beginning of summer, Eddie's voice on the phone, "We'll meet up at midnight in the park." The first 3 weeks had been fun, city to city, party to party, crashing in a yard or on a couch or in the woods, jumping trains, bathing in lakes, finding open arms in college towns, older kids who got them wasted, and tried to pass on their wisdom. Branches, leaves, one hot summer day, a forest somewhere north, far from home, but not out of the same time zone yet. The trees were a thick green of cool against the sun. Bird songs. A hill in the distance, high and forbidding. They'd try to skirt it until the trail narrowed out, headed up to a plateau, thin pathway between 50 feet of pure freefall on either side. Only 8 or 9 steps to do it. Just run, Stosh had said, making it to the top, and Liddy behind him. Mia had closed her eyes, couldn't bear to look down at the drop as she scampered up, heart pounding, not slowing down even after her feet hit level ground. Eddie was last. Halfway up the slope, the soil shifted beneath his feet, boots unsteady in the loosening dirt, terror in his eyes. Mia pitched forward on her knees to grab him, the brush of his fingers left in her palms forever, before he slid out of sight and fell to the ground. It took them 2 agonizing hours to reach his body. A makeshift grave covered in wildflowers, tears, improvised prayers. No thought of turning back or telling the cops. Accident would turn into blame. Best to move onward. I didn't save him. She stretched, felt the concrete floor hard under her back, but no urge to leave or even get up. There was nowhere to go. They just changed one set of borders for another. Back in the hideaway, Stasha's mood was catching. Come on, it's never gotten this out at night. Nobody'll see us. Dried sweat, the itch of dirt. Okay, let's go. The sky was black with a few scattered stars as they made their way down to the water. Fuck the needles, fuck danger tonight. Liddy crossed her arms and lifted her top over her head, clutched it to her chest a few seconds before letting it drop to the sand. She hadn't been wearing anything underneath. How long it had been since she'd been completely naked in front of another person? It felt weird. She pulled down her jeans, her panties, and ran into the ocean. He chased her in and pushed her down. She pulled him in with her, wrestling like children, splashing each other, and laughing through mouthfuls of salt water. It felt so good to be submerged. Clean. He swam towards a jetty, leaned back against a wave-smoothed rock. Fucking paradise, he said. The water caressed her skin like a 1,000 soft tongues. It brought back memories of swimming pools, wading ponds, safe places. They could almost pretend that they were just 2 kids out skinny dipping. She stared at him, the way his wet hair trailed to his shoulders like tiny serpents, hands that had always been ready to catch her when she fell. Moonlight glittered in his eyes, shifted along the planes of his face. She walked on swirly feet, thinking him over. Stosh, after all this time? His skin glowed silver as he watched her. Rock and sky and surf, all black, a moment's respite from the bleak landscape that awaited them back at shore. Here, now, warmth. Her body ached for connection. She glided to him, stroked her cheek against his stubble, and their mouths met. His arms circled her, held her tightly. She ran her hands down his shoulders, traced his ribcage, so little meat to his body. He kissed her face, her neck. She shivered when his lips found her breast. Soft kisses, tongue like a butterfly, a little teeth. My God, she thought, how long has it been since any of us have gotten laid? She closed her eyes and ran her fingers through his hair. She could feel the rumbling of her own stomach, subdued by lust, but still there. Always there. She wished she had milk to feed him. Stosh moved to the other breast, his mouth over her heart. I would tear it out for you, Stosh. I would give it to you. Here, eat. The rocks above them were sharp, out of the water's eroding reach. Her pulse was pounding. This felt too good, dangerously good. With one quick motion, she scraped the skin of her inner arm against a jagged edge. Blood rose to the surface and began to dip into the water, onto his face. The pain shot through her pleasure, exquisitely lighting up everywhere. She'd been locked up and closed off. Are you all right? Stosh looked up at her, oblivious to the blood on his face. Below, so hard, wanting her, as much as she wanted him. I just cut myself. It's nothing. She barely managed to speak, angling her hips and drawing him inside her. She clung to him as he buried himself in her body, his hair falling into a curtain around their faces. I'll never let you go now. But as sweet as it felt later in the hideaway, she felt hollow, still hungry. The strongest love in the world couldn't take care of that. they needed money. The next day came hot and harsh. Liddy woke up in the afternoon, looked over at Stosh, still asleep, and crawled out to the boardwalk. Think, Liddy, think. Sex. It would have to be sex. What else was left? Topless dancing. There were lots of clubs down south. Dancers made a lot of money, didn't they? She looked down at herself. Her hands were dry and scarred, and her legs hadn't seen a razor in forever. She could only imagine how bad her face must look. No one would hire her like this. Prostitution? She sighed. Was she that hard up? Could she really let some stranger stick his dick in her for $20? $20. Fucking $20. That's all her ass was worth. Maybe not even, because the streetwalkers down the coast at least looked clean. Up here, this is where girls knocked their own teeth out just to charge a couple bucks more for a blowjob. If she whored, that's what she would be, just a hole. No. But maybe she could pretend, act like she was going to give the John the night of his life and then kick him in the nuts, split with his cash. How hard could that be? Okay, where do you find them? Who could help her? She got up and headed off to find Mia. Mia was near the bathroom, hopping from foot to foot in her anxious little dance. Liddy, you seen Yvonne? Is she meeting you here? Yeah, she's got my pay. I don't feel like a fucking scavenger hunt. Does Yvonne do other shit? What? Other stuff besides drugs. Mia paused. Dunno, you're gonna have to ask her. And then Yvonne's dark form appeared at the edge of the boardwalk. Her eyes were hidden behind enormous mirrored shades, and she walked toward them slowly, cigarette burning between red-painted fingertips. Liddy tried to put her hand on Mia's arm to keep her from running up to her dealer, to save her from looking that pathetic, but it was too late. Do you have it? Yvonne blew smoke in her face. Yes. Bitch, thought Liddy. Where is it? Yvonne smiled. Behind the arcade. Frankie'll meet you there. Mia dashed off without a word, leaving Liddy alone with Yvonne. Your friend's a fucking mess, Yvonne said coolly, watching her go. I know. Liddy looked down. Shit. So, what's your game? Drag. Exhale. Liddy was in the middle of taking a deep breath when the question came at her, like such a line from a bad movie that she started to laugh, and then quickly tried to cover it up with coughing. Yvonne glared at her. Liddy cleared her throat. You hook up girls who need cash, right? With men who can give it to them? Yvonne dragged deeply. I know some people. What are you into? Whips? Chains? How far are you willing to go? Liddy hid her hands behind her back, which were starting to shake. As far as they want. I'm homeless trash. Use me up. Throw me away. Good girl. That's good to hear. Can't have a girl say she's all ready to go and cries bloody murder when her ass hurts later. Drag. I got a guy. Likes brunettes. I can get him tonight. 40 for the date. Half to me for hooking you up. Are you in? Liddy nodded. Fucking 20. She'd been right. Can't have you looking like that, though. You can come by my place later. Use the hose. Can't have crabs getting in my shower. She dropped her cigarette to the boards and crushed it with her foot. Sundown. Don't be late. She walked away, Theta Bara's gorgeous face twisting the knife in Liddy's guts. Stosh was completely at peace when he woke up. The touch of Liddy's hands, the slick of her skin, last night came flooding back and left him with a beautiful sense of calm, shades of his old life, like maybe things wouldn't be so bad after all. Mia. He regretted yesterday. She'd never returned to the hideaway. He shook his head, tried to clear his mind. This was the first time he'd felt any kind of hopeful since the accident. Focus on the positive, and stop being an asshole. Liddy said she'd had something important to do, something she wouldn't tell him. Morning after pill? Phone call to her fairy godmother? It was all cool with Stosh. Let her have her secrets. He picked up a plastic garbage bag that was in half-decent shape and started his daily wander through the dumpsters. After last night, who knew what else could happen? Yvonne looked over at Liddy, watched her comb out her knotted hair. Girl didn't say much. Couldn't blame her, really. She seemed a little smarter, stronger than everyone else under the boardwalk. Not a total waste, but gravity gets everyone. It's just a matter of time. What to dress her in? Something to hide the cuts on her legs. She'd had trouble holding both the razor and the hose. Yvonne walked across her bedroom, past the little balcony that opened out onto a view of the ocean. The condo was one of the town's few failed attempts at gentrification. She had no idea how Frankie could live in his storefront with those plate glass windows just begging to be smashed. But nobody bothered his little slaughterhouse on the beach. They all knew better, most likely. She went through her closet, not the one with the leathers and the silks, but the other one, the one that held the clothes Frankie bought her. Pilled cotton crop tops, cheap vinyl miniskirts, scuffed go-go boots. She searched for something without stains and pulled out a long pink dress, spandex stripper's number, and dropped it on Liddy's lap. Yvonne watched Liddy lift it up, a look of total disorientation on the girl's face. Welcome back to civilization. She watched as Liddy undressed, enjoyed the girl's obvious discomfort. Oh, she'd have a good time with Hogan, another perv, not from the same soul-sucking set as Gary, but there was a reason he came up north for his dates. A couple of black stilettos with scraped toes, a size too small, Liddy stood up, grimaced, and walked unsteadily towards the door. Remember, 20 back here ASAP. Got it? She tapped a sharp nail on Liddy's shoulder. Anger, nervousness, fear, all swirling around behind the bravado. Yvonne savored it as Liddy nodded and walked out the door. Yvonne watched her totter down the street, trying to hold her head high. She was caught in the meat grinder now, and one way or another, her blood would fall. Yvonne laughed and walked back into her bedroom, to where the day's money was kept in a little wooden box on her dresser. She placed her hands atop its splintered surface, the dying dreams of all her addicts gathered beneath, with the little help of Frankie, her psychopathic woodcutter. She could practically feel Liddy's heart beating inside. Hogan was late. Damn, Liddy leaned against the wall outside the liquor store, cursing the pain in her feet. A blue sedan was pulling to the curb up ahead. Great. A guy with an almost shaved scalp sat in the driver's seat, white button-down, beige pants, uniform of male anonymity. She opened the door, was hit with the scent of strong aftershave as she climbed in. The leather seat felt strange, civility beneath her thighs. Yvonne said you'd be pretty. You look great in that dress. Thin lips, slightly pursed. Thin lips were always cruel. Something like a lab coat was bunched up on the back seat. Was he a doctor? Down south had better action for those who could pay. Why would he be up here? He was talking to her, but she just nodded along as she composed herself. The next 20 minutes would decide the rest of her life. They pulled up to a motel. Orange and pink lollipop colors for vacationing 60s families, now cracked and faded in advertising rooms by the hour. I'll take care of it. Meet me on the second floor. He waited for her to get out of the car before he locked it and walked into the tiny office. She ascended, wincing at each step, and looked out over the block. Newspaper plastered the windows of empty stores, brightened only by the red neon from a Chinese takeout place. The horizon beyond, now invisible in the dark. Always that same fucking horizon, the one that had seduced them all away in the first place. Was there anywhere out there for them to run to? She closed her eyes and shook her head. Not the time for that, now. She opened them again and she saw a man staring at her, down in the parking lot. He turned away before she had a chance to make out his face. No one looked at her on the boardwalk in her filthy clothes. One pink dress, and suddenly she was fuckable again. She gripped the railing tightly. Keys jingling. Footsteps. Hogan was coming up the steps, grinning at her. She forced a smile as he walked her to a corner room. He unlocked the door, turned on the light. Movements so casual, like it was his living room. How many women had he brought here? He closed the door behind her and immediately pushed her against the wall, his mouth minty and warm on hers. His hands went to her breasts, his property for the next hour. Zero to fuck when you're getting paid for it. She steeled herself to kiss him back, Ugh, slid her hands down his back, make like she was running her hands over his ass. She hit the telltale bulge of wallet. Bingo. Her knee went up once, twice, and he doubled forward. You little bitch! He reached out to the wall while Liddy slipped away, looked for something to knock him out with. She turned to the dresser, a big yellow lamp, discover it was nailed down. Oh, shit! Hogan was coming at her now, grabbing a handful of her hair and pulling hard. Didn't Yvonne tell you? He sneered. I'm the one who does the hitting. Hogan slapped Liddy across the face, hard smack that blinded her, dropped her to the floor. Hogan stood over her, eyes alight as he rolled back the sleeves of his shirt, slow, like some kind of ritual. It dawned on her that it didn't matter if she provoked him or not. The beating was part of the session. A stiletto flew up and caught him in the crotch. Weapons! She curled a leg around his ankle and yanked him to the floor, his head knocking against the dresser as he fell. He tore at her dress, but she squirmed away, plucked the shoes from her feet, turned the sharp points outward as he lunged for her. Nothing to lose, nothing to live for if I can't win. Fists that were used to compliant screaming, fists that grabbed out for her and never saw the stiletto heel coming for his left eye. Instant fetal curl around a gush of blood. Liddy grabbed the edge of a blanket, gagged the bellowing back into his mouth, held back her bile as she slammed his head against the dresser over and over until he fell unconscious. She took his wallet, stripped him of his shirt and pants, no telltale hooker sex pink to give her away, feet free to run. She grabbed his car keys and dashed down the staircase, into the car. It had been so long since she'd felt a wheel beneath her hands. Freedom! She started the engine and backed out. The radio had started along with the car, stupid pop crap. Driving with one hand, she spun the dial with the other. Metal! She screamed and jacked the volume, stomped the gas, and floored it all the way back to the hideaway. Not a bad day. Someone had dumped a load of old clothes by the side of the road, and Stosh was about to drag it all down to the ocean for a wash when he heard Liddy. Stosh, we gotta get out of here, now! She cried, crashing through shells, spraying sand everywhere. What's wrong? What happened to your clothes? I just whacked one of Yvonne's Johns. We gotta move. Where's Mia? Stosh looked across the beach. Fuck, probably the lighthouse. We can't just leave her there. How much you got? Enough to get us out of here? Yeah. Holy shit, that was real green in her hands. Yeah. I'll come back and get her later. We need to hide you somewhere safe. I got the car, she said, grabbing his hand. Come on! She turned around and nearly knocked into Frankie. Shaking his head and muttering something about Yvonne never trusting the new girls on their first night, pointing a shiny .45 directly in her face. Mia was lying down on the floor of the lighthouse. Funny, the game hadn't lasted as long today. Frankie liked to drag it out as long as possible. He just pointed to the dumpster, let her dig around in all that wet stink for about 10 minutes before finding it for her, taped to the back edge, not technically inside it, oh, you fucker, and taking off. Odd. Maybe he had a new junkie to torment. She peered out of one of the windows, saw Stosh and Liddy walking up the boardwalk with Frankie. What were they doing with him? But then Liddy had wanted to meet Yvonne. Mia sat up, let her legs dangle down the top steps, rocked herself back and forth. Something about it didn't seem right. They hated Gary. Maybe they were all in some kind of deal together? Whatever it was, they hadn't needed her. She let the thoughts go and let the warm white waves pour over her. Frankie's hands were twisted in Liddy's hair as she heard the door slam behind her, dreadful final sound of the turning lock. Her bare feet dragged on the floor, and she looked all around the room for an escape. None. He tossed her to the floor. She felt nauseous. What the fuck are you gonna do, man? What do you want from us? Stosh, yelling from directly below her, in the basement. Frankie started binding her legs with rope. She struggled and he crushed her stomach against a cruel work boot. Frankie turned her over to tie her hands behind her back, and she peeked through a crack in the floorboards directly into Stosh's eyes. She struggled against the pain in her stomach to speak, but all she could do was gasp before Frankie turned her back over. She looked at him, at the room. Everything came into sharp focus, crystal clear, shimmering with danger. A light bulb burned painfully bright, dark stains on the walls, some hand-printed smears. The rumors are true. She shook uncontrollably, twisting her hands against the rope as she waited for whatever he was going to do to her. Tears streamed down her face, palms on the steering wheel, money in her hands. She'd been so close. Frankie's weapon of choice was brought into view. Liddy screamed. She felt the world freeze, 1 second that went on forever, as she saw Stosh in the pit, Mia in school, Eddie falling, the engine thrumming beneath her foot. His hands came down, 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 with that sharp edge rushing up to her face. Oh, my God. A wet sound, a sticking sound, bone smacked open, flesh sucking up at the blade as it was pulled upward for another strike. Stosh jumped as high as he could from the crates he'd stacked. She was only 3 feet away, but totally out of reach. He screamed her name, clawed at the air while Frankie pounded at her body. Her voice melted into gurgling breaths, her feet convulsed against the floor. Drops of her blood fell from the boards, spattered at his feet, into his mouth. It burned, bitter taste of life not ready to cool down yet, squeezed fresh from a terrified heart. It caught in his throat, and he tried one last impossible jump before losing his balance on the crates. He fell to the floor, hit his head, passed into merciful black. Stosh awoke to bright light and a dull ache at his left temple. He sat up and looked around, remembered where he was. Liddy. He was surprised to find the door open. He thought they'd wanted to kill him, too. A trail of red caught his eye. His eyes followed it up into a junked bathtub. She lay on her back. From the neck up, a mass of pulp framed in clotted hair, stomach-churning riot of blood and bone. Her mouth, a gaping hole with a few teeth left intact, eternal scream. His breath came quick and jagged. Something was written on the wall. Dried blood. Go. He stepped outside and threw up, heaving and heaving until there was nothing left but the bile of rock bottom. She was gone. She was gone. He staggered toward the ocean. His sneakers touched the water, but he didn't stop. He walked in, up to his waist, his chest, submerging himself until only his head was above water. And that was how Mia found him, hours later. Yvonne stood at her window, holding back the lace curtain, cigarette burning away in the other hand. Mia and Stosh were walking toward the highway, shoulders slumped, heads down, carrying what was left of their lives in ratty little packs. It was a pathetic sight, but it could have been worse. At least they were getting out of here. Alive. Behind her, Frankie lit up a smoke of his own and joined her at the window. What are you doing letting her friends go? Don't you want to take them out too? She didn't answer him, just kept watching them until their figures shrank smaller and smaller down the highway until they disappeared out of sight. She shook her head and let the curtains drop. Let them bleed, Frankie, she said. Let them bleed.
Dirt Gently has always been in the shadow of Hitchhiker's Guide a little, if nothing else because of the vast, towering cultural leviathan the guide has justifiably become. It's a shame, too, because the second novel, Long Dark Tea Time of the Soul, is particularly good. The hapless Dirk is forced to dress as a female gypsy fortune teller, and when a client arrives who claims to have been stalked by a goblin, looking to collect on a contract, things may not become easier, but they certainly become a lot more interesting. Played with wonderful, surly aplomb by Harry Enfield, Dirk is one of Douglas Adams' great creations, and Long Dark Tea Time of the Soul is available from Audible now. Happy Christmas, everyone! Hope your festive season's going very well. I'm really fond of this time of year, not just because it's Christmas, and that's always cool, but also this time, this period between Christmas and New Year. This is the back end, the time where there's nothing really pressing to do, you just get to relax a little, wait for the new year to start, and of course, look back at the year that's finishing. I don't drink, except at parties and then tiny amounts, I'm not so much straight edges. kind of curvy. But I do drink tea, and lots of it. Pip pip, tally-ho, happy new year, MacArthur Bug. As a result, there are some people I am raising a... Yes, yes, it is a Dalek mug, too. First off, the 2008 Pseudopod authors. I love this job, for a whole variety of reasons. Not the least of which is the fact that every week, I get to hear something new. There are some phenomenally talented writers working in horror, and it is an honour and a privilege to help highlight those stories, and hopefully help their careers. You've made this a fascinating, immensely diverse, and wonderfully horrible year. Well done. Secondly, there's the intrepid Starford escape artists. Mr. Benjamin Montague Cranston Phillips, the two-fisted shadow of horror podcastering, is one of the best bosses I have ever had. He's smart, he's funny, he's fair, and that's even before I get to him being one of the best readers I've ever heard. If my cunning plan to steal Anthony Head's vocal cords doesn't come off, well, you should maybe get some new locks, boss. All I'm saying. Matt and Inara, our two admin staff, are the newest and least visible members of the team. They're also two of the most vital, ensuring that contracts are sent out, narrators are signed, all the invisible, completely vital work that goes unnoticed and which we simply could not live without. Thanks, guys. We all owe you one. Intrepid slush wrangler Ellen Allen is many things. She's a consummate knitter, a great writer, and my best friend. Elle's work in the slush mines is, like Matt and Inara's, completely invisible, and like Matt and Inara, she's vital to the process. Good stuff, buddy. Keep it coming. Steve Ely is a genius. I say that absolutely seriously because the man has, almost single-handedly, invented the short fiction podcast market, written some excellent fiction himself, and presented an astounding 183 episodes of Escape Pod. Steve's wit and enthusiasm and honesty and just plain niceness are an inspiration, and that's even before the whole, you know, giving me a job thing. Thanks, sir, for everything. Then there's you. All of you. Yeah, even you, the guy at the back. You've liked some stories, you've hated others, but you've been here, you've listened. And whether you've commented or not, we cannot thank you enough for that one simple, quietly kind of heroic thing. You showed up. You're the reason we do this. Well, that and the frequent drinking contest with Bono, and boy, can he put it away. Fictional drinking games with members of U2 notwithstanding, thank you. And Happy New Year. See you in 2009 for more true stories. Well, I say true. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. And Pseudopod's gone bye-bye, Egon. What have you got left?